the wild cards, Tom Latimer and Royce Isaacs. And while we're at it, let's talk about who's the third man, brother. We are an organization, we are strictly business, but sometimes a business organization has to hire in independent contractors for a little outside help. So what I'd like to do right now is introduce you to that help. Let's take a look at who our third man is going to be.
Another legendary wrestler, ready to do battle here at GPB Studios on NWA Power. What a pick by Nick Aldis. Into the
Well, definitely a little bit of a change of pace from what we've done the last couple of weeks, but seeing as the fact that this current version of his theme song was not available, and I realized we could play right over the episode, I thought, why not? Let's play the ending to episode 13, lucky 13 of the NWA Power Review. Well, the NWA Power, but this is the NWA Power Review, courtesy of the WNC Network. I'm Johnny Florida, but more importantly, I think he called himself earlier in the night, the Overlord Illuminati, so many different names he's called himself over time. I personally like to call him the soon-to-be next sewer commissioner for the city of Dallas, as soon as we get a couple people to vote for him.
There you go.
Everybody, Papa Dave Sincere, sewer commissioner, city of Dallas, 2020.
Yeah, let me shovel your shit, folks.
He'll shovel your shit and toss it on those who deserve it.
That's right. And I'll be a shit shoveling so-and-so.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing?
Yeah, I hope you're enjoying yourself, Dave.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. If people are listening, those listening live were a little bit later than normal. That's okay. You know, it happens at times. But more importantly, for anybody that's listening to us, period, you'll notice me and Dave sound a little different. It's that time of the year and people are getting sick. So Dave's been a little sick. I've been a lot of sick, finally feeling better. Just in time for me to go back to work tomorrow. But I am hopeful that I'm about to feel even better than I have been. The tradition I've done for the last episode was that I said I bought a couple of bottles of wine when I was in Georgia for the NWA. Well, I am opening up another bottle. I just opened up another one. This one is Savannah River Red, sweet grapevine with honey added. I just noticed that. That sounds pretty good. And it's from the Still Pond Vineyards. Go to stillpond.com if you want to try it out. This thing, I gotta say, they definitely put a little bit more than expected, and I know that because the end of the wine cork for about maybe half an inch is saturated. So that tells you one thing. Well, kind of could be two because of the idea with the air pressure or the lack thereof. But now I'm here myself, Dave.
Still?
Well, I haven't the whole time until now.
Okay, are you still hearing yourself right now? Do you hear me?
I hear you and I hear me, but on a delay. Like a half a second.
Okay. Well, keep talking. I think I know what it is. I'm posting another notice.
Okay.
Talk for a second. I'll do that and I'll shut this down.
Okay, not a problem. Yeah, God knows people listening probably don't want to hear my voice once as is, let alone hearing it twice. So, but I'm going to try this out. Oh, that is smooth. Oh, it got a little bit of a spice to it, too. That's a surprise for a sweet with honey. But nonetheless, good stuff. So I'm going to be enjoying this throughout the night. I've been spending a lot of time as well lately, Dave. It's been stuff, not only being sick, but I've actually been packing up a lot of stuff, throwing out a lot of trash, because my lease is up in the end of April, and I'm going to be moving out of this place and moving a little bit up north. And I decided to get a little bit ahead of the game. So take care of some of the stuff and do it piece by piece like that, to the point that when April comes, I have like only bare essentials left. And let it be done, taken care of like that over time rather than all at once at the end.
Dude, that's a good plan.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, a side note, you'd be amazed at how much trash you could throw away when you start looking at stuff and be like, I don't need this, I don't need that. So I even looked in one of my old Tough boxes, you know, and found a cell phone I had years ago, a fake berry that I got. And the only thing missing, the battery's there. The old Go phone SIM card is there, which means it's for a prepaid phone, guys. Everything's there except the charger. And I could buy that for like $5-$10 on eBay. So I'm probably going to do that just to have an extra phone. So... Hey, the best part as well is that it's a Go phone, so if I ever have to get off the grid, I could just use that phone. Like the hippies did back in the 70s.
There you go.
So, but I'll tell you one thing that the hippies were doing while they were staying off the grid back in the 70s, they were also tuning into some NWA professional wrestling, depending on where they were in the country. Where did Woodstock take place, Dave?
upstate New York.
Okay. Well, they were probably stuck watching WWF, which is why Woodstock didn't last forever. So those guys probably came back down to Georgia, where they turn into Georgia Championship Wrestling, the place that was based out of Atlanta, which is also the current basis for NWA Power. If anybody thinks that was not a good transition, I am sorry, I am sick, and I'm trying. Okay, I'm also trying to hold in the... that. I'm trying not to do that too much with the microphone, because God knows you guys are going to get annoyed with that. So, I really enjoyed this episode, Dave. You know, Unlucky 13, and it was a really good one. This was the first one of the new year, essentially. I mean, the last one happened. I mean, you know, the last one happened a day early, right?
Friend of yeah. Yes, I remember that.
Right, so this was the first one for New Year. One thing I decided to do, though, to keep track, I decided to have a little bit of fun, and I tried to keep track of how the live viewers. So while I was watching the show, I kept looking down, because when a video is live on YouTube, you can see how many people are watching it with you. And these guys are... For the record, these guys are building their numbers pretty fast already. They're already up to almost 40,200 views right now. And so that's pretty good, pretty fast. And hopefully they can keep growing, because last week's episode was 180,000. And so they're starting to have a problem reaching 200,000 again. I hope they can pull that off. But I wish I knew how many people were watching it live for each episode. I wish there was a way for us to see that. They probably could see it in their analytics and YouTube studio, but we can't see it. The highest point that I can verify was right at the very end when they, as they were announcing the surprise, associate, if you will, for Strictly Business. I don't know if he's going to be a full fledged member, but the associate, and we'll get to that. It was right near the end, 62 minutes in. This episode went longer, which I loved. But they got a high that I can confirm of 7,371 viewers. I would not doubt if they had double that at the very least on episode 2 or 3. Episode 1, they probably had 30,000 people watching live or something like that. They got over 500,000 viewers. But I got to tell you this, Dave. I was watching those numbers, and it was taking a while for the numbers to grow. I mean, at the beginning, you know, you were watching how many people were watching with you, and then it started growing and picking up pretty fast and fast in the first 10 minutes. It's like, okay, this is good. And then it started slowly going up, and then it would go back down and go back up and go back down. And it slowly took its time to get up there. I mean, even the main event, I mean, the main event match, I can tell you that I watched at one point, and I saw the numbers drop, and the numbers dropped during the main event about 450 fans. Now, most of them came back up, and then it was post-match, during the post-match interview when Strictly Business came out, that the numbers were picking up again and got to its high point. Probably, maybe there was some kind of alert that the NWA put out to everybody saying, you know, just look who just is showing up a sudden, and then we all tune in. Well, those people, I mean, I was already watching. But it, at a point, it did drop about 450 fans and then slowly work its way back up. You know, so it's crazy to think that, like, how many people, how many people were dropping even during the match, which I thought was a good match.
Oh, the main event, yeah, pretty good. It was a pretty good tag team match, sure was.
So, do you have any comments you want to say before we get into it?
I don't think so. I think we can just jump right into the show tonight.
Okay, then we're gonna jump right into the show like a pool with no water in it. As soon as the episode starts, and it's an interview with none other than Tim Storm. Tim Storm actually makes a big point. They ask him about the TV title tournament, how everything's going for him. And something that was a surprise to me, Dave, this whole time, hang on. This whole time in the tournament, the way I figured was, okay, 12 guys in the tournament. Okay, so we're going to be down to 6 people, and then we're probably going to have 3 more singles matches and then 1 triple threat match and then go from there. Or it was either that or it was going to be a 6-pack challenge. That was my idea. Okay, this is what we're going to do with 6 guys. We're going to be down to a triple threat or we're going to be with a 6-pack. Tim Storm revealed that in the original 12 wrestlers in a tournament, 6 of them are advancing, but there's going to be 2 surprise entrants most likely into the tournament, most likely not from the NWA. So they could be coming from anywhere else. They could be a free agent. He even said they could be coming from another company, you know, much like the Crockett Cup.
Mm-hmm.
That made me, I was caught by complete surprise by that. I didn't know what to expect. And it's making me wonder, you know, we've heard no rumors. We now know. I knew about the surprise guest appearance that happened, and it happens later on tonight. Guarantee he's not going to be in the tournament. But I'm just wondering, like, if there's anything. I got no clue who it could be, and I haven't heard about any other big things, so maybe it's not going to happen until Hard Times. But it is making me curious who the other guys could be. Have you got any speculation?
Well, now, let's think of somebody that showed up during the pay-per-view, Marty Scurll. Marty I think he's still by contract bound in some way to Ring of Honor.
His contract ran up, but he's still working with them to a point right now because he's still part of the Villain Enterprises and 6-man tag team champions, and with PCO being the world champion. So everything he's doing right now is mostly a loyalty, if you will. You know, it's a handshake agreement.
So and so what he's basically is doing is working as a true independent contractor between the NWA and Ring of Honor and whatever else he happens to be doing. So that's one good example. And there again, man, you know, there's all kinds of guys out there working for some of the bigger indies, some of the indies that have TV deals. You got the championship wrestling shows from Hollywood and from Arizona, and you got all those guys that can come in and out very easily because they're in the organization while maybe not being in the NWA. So I think being with the NWA also offers that kind of opportunity where you don't have to be a company man. You got your champions and you've got the people who are regular on the roster. And I think it would be very good and very healthy for the company to be able to bring people in and out from different places. Some Japanese champions, some European champions, some of the big indie champions from around the country. All kinds of great possibilities. And the NWA is the perfect place to do that. Because you have a tradition of people coming in, going for the NWA world title. Not particularly being affiliated with the NWA, but the title itself and the name itself holds such prestige that, the company itself is a major draw for, any independent contractors and guys that, have the ability to work between companies.
No, I definitely make a good point on that. Here's the question I got to ask. Do you, at least one of them is going to be a mainstay name. The idea that they're going to be doing this, I think one of them is going to have to be a mainstay name to build up. Like now we got this wow factor. It's a wild card, no pun intended. So it's making me curious as to who they could be. At least one of them has to be a mainstay. Do you think both of them are going to be mainstays, or do you think it could be? I mean, you just mentioned everything, like with CWFH and Arizona, basically the greater UWN. I mean, they got this new thing going on with the Circle Squared with newcomers trying out for the NWA. You think it could be any of that kind of stuff? Or, I mean, do you think they're going to have to pull off, okay, two major wow factors, like two surprise mainstream names in order to do it, or do you think there's going to, like, if they were to do a lesser name, that somebody, they would probably not go over so well?
Okay, here's my hope. This is going to kind of tie in also to some stuff that we're going to be talking about on the show. I hope that they can find and they can pull in some of the really good young guys out there. But they about got the market cornered on 35 and above. As truly evidenced by tonight's entrant into the Wheel of Fortune. So, you know, I'd love to see.
So no Abdullah the Butcher, huh?
I don't want to see Abdullah. I really don't want to see Abdullah. I don't think Abdullah can walk anymore. So they'd have to roll into the ring. Which might be pretty good if they can get those guys down on the floor. That
yeah.
He might.
Get Fred Durst and Limp Bizkit to come in. Keep rolling, rolling, rolling.
There you go. So, I can't think of any names right off the top of my. I mean, I have some like ideal fantasy stuff, but I don't really see it happening. I'd love to see a young guy like Alexander Hammerstone or Richard Holiday, for example, from MLW. Be able to slide in maybe for some a title contention match or two or a good angle against one of the baby faces. And I want to say something about back up real quick. You were talking about Tim Storm's promo tonight to open the show.
Right.
I don't know if anybody who's a professional actually in the business ever listens to us, but if you do, I'm going to encourage you to do something. I want you to go back, and I want everybody that wants to know how to do a babyface promo or a babyface interview, go back and watch what Tim Storm did tonight. That's as perfect a babyface, aw gosh, aw shucks, you know, clap and stomp interview as you will ever see.
Right.
That's how a babyface talks to the people. He looks at the fans in the audience. He talks to them. He communicates person to person, and he's just and Tim Storm has a very low key but smooth delivery. So I mean, it's just it was an outstanding interview, outstanding promo, done the way every babyface ought to do those things. So kudos to him.
I can't disagree on that. I want to shout out a couple of names. They are picking some of the younger guys like you're mentioning. There's a tag team that I liked, like you mentioned, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. These guys, I haven't seen them in a while, and now, to be fair, they could still be wrestling in CWF Hollywood. I haven't been watching them. I should. You know, much respect to Dave Marquez. But there was a there's a tag team that I'm a fan of, and I hope they're still a tag team. Gentleman Jervis Cottonbelly. If people remember him, he's the guy who wears the yellow mask with the different colored eyes and the mustache sewn onto the mask. Comes out. It kind of looks like if you took Pennybags from oh my god, Monopoly, and mixed him with a clown. That's kind of what this guy is. He's pretty cool. Him and his tag team partner, when they were the UWN Tag Team Champions, was the Hobo. If I remember right, he was billed on the billed from the train tracks or something like that, weighing in at 204 cans of beans, something like that. I'd love to see those guys. They did great in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. They got a guy who could vouch for them, being Dave Marquez. I would love to see those guys get into the NWA. And if I'll tell you, if you wanted to pick a surprise guy for younger wrestlers that are not known, and you're hoping it can create a buzz, having a wrestler by the name of the Hobo and having Gentleman Jervis Cottonbelly would definitely be a way to try it out. I don't know if somebody's going to look at the Hobo and start feeling like a, you know, rest in peace to Timmy Austin. I hope they don't look at it like the ECW zombie thing, like, okay, this is a joke. But it definitely has potential, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that would be definitely something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Some fresh new faces.
Oh, yeah.
Whether masked or not.
Fresh new face, a fresh new mask. There you go. Well, we then, as he's calling out Nick Aldis. Tim's calling him out. And then Camille comes out and confronts him, literally pushes Joe Galli out of the way, grabs the mic and puts it up to her mouth, and it looks like she's finally going to say something. Nope. Not a damn thing. Nobody knows what her voice sounds like anymore. I actually remember I went to an indie event down here in Florida, and she wrestled at it. This is back when she was, I don't know if you want to call her nobody, but she was dating Braun Strowman, but still a nobody in the Florida scene. And now here she is. Go figure. Tim Storm starts talking more trash about Nick Aldis and everything. The fans are chanting coward, and it takes over the studio. And then finally, you know, Tim Storm says, is he a coward? And then Camille just slaps him in the face so hard. That was one of the best slaps probably ever. Like, I mean, if that was done on a politician, that person would have lost re-election just because they look like a punk bitch. That's how bad of a slap that was,
dude. It that's exactly what it was done for. You know, she knew, because of the kind of man Tim Storm is, Tim Storm ain't going to retaliate against a woman,
right?
Athletic woman like that, he's not going to do that, because he knows he would absolutely destroy her. So he was left standing there just stewing in his own juices, and she got to walk away smiling
and profiling.
It was done very well. At first I was like, man, they're kind of going long with this, with the promos and talking. But then she walks out, and after he does his thing and she does that, and I went, oh, okay, well, yeah, but, well, this was worth it. This was definitely worth the wait.
Yeah.
This is where they're going, then they're building a hell of a good story here, whichever way it's going, of course. But I think they're on to something.
Do you think they might actually be building to a potential Tim Storm versus Camille match?
I hope not.
Because I could just see that. You know, if you think about it, let's look at some of the women in the past who have wrestled men. You think of China. You think of Awesome Kong. There's a girl in Southern Texas who wrestles by the name of Ruthless Lala. I saw her at an event at NWA Wrestling Revolution. She's a beast. You know, you think about women like that, whether they're big ones like Kong and Lala, or they're just built and sexy like China. Camille is the same thing. You know, Camille is the same as China. I mean, she's not as muscle bound, but she's fit, she's firm, she's gorgeous, and she's serious. Like, she makes these seductive, you know, prissy bitch faces at times, But she's all seriousness at the same time. And she is like their China. And that doesn't, I'm not saying that like, okay, you know, China became the Intercontinental Champion. Does that mean I see, Camille going for it? If they were to ever do that, it would be with Camille. I'll say that. I don't think that's what they're gonna ever do, but I would not doubt that they would do the idea of a Camille versus, Tim Storm.
All I'll say is this. I hope not, because I don't want to see it. I don't. I'm not a big fan of mixed matches.
Alright.
It was never a thing that I went, oh, okay, well, you know, this ought to be good. You know, if the circumstances were right, maybe if they could set something up in the right way, sure, you know, I'd give it a whirl, but, you know, just a face-to-face, here we go, you know, a 30-minute time limit, I prefer not to see that, unless there's going to be a big, big schmoz in it somewhere. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. If they do it, I think that's going to be a real schmoz, and it'll definitely get the shock factor. We then come back to announcing the next participants for the TV title. There's only four participants left, so the next match made will also determine the final match. And the surprise is that they pick out Zane Dawson, and it turns out that Zane will be facing him against his brother, Dave Dawson. So it's going to be the collision of the Dawsons, which leaves the final match is going to be Tom Latimer of the Wild Card versus Trevor Murdoch. Before we get into the matches and like what we're about to see from those, I just gotta say it again, that Anastasia Fletcher, that supposed lawyer, whatever, who's there to do the, to pick out, she's like a deer in the headlights. She just stares at the camera. I don't think she knows what she's doing or how to handle herself. Like, she's given this look of like she's telling her head, okay, be professional. Look strong. You're a strong woman. You know, you're a strong woman. You can handle these men. Not trying to get on that whole thing, but maybe she's telling herself that. You know, don't be scared by all these by these beasts and everything. You, just be strong. Look at the camera. Be professional. You're representing the firm. That's literally what she kind of looks like to a point. What do you think, Dave?
You had it pretty much on the head with the deer in the headlights thing. She portrays no personality. Nothing. She's two arms, two legs, and a head.
She doesn't even smile.
No, she does nothing. She reaches into a jar. That's her job. You know, damn good gig. I don't know who she's zooming, but good for her. Now, yeah, I made a sexist remark there, kids. Okay. There she is. Now, I was a little disappointed in that drawing outcome.
Really?
Because the Dawsons, you know, Zane facing his brother, that was kind of on the nose for me. I went, okay. I mean, I'd probably be a pretty damn good match, however they do it, but that was a little on the nose. Because somebody had, if you remember, right before they drew the second name, whoever was standing out there said, oh, I hope it's your brother. Yeah. And Marquez says, I don't believe this. This is impossible. And it was his brother. And I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They're kind of reaching back to the old days of yesteryear when you were pulling names for the tournament or whatever. Hey, Fabe.
Yeah, kind of like the old, what do they call them, the Cadillac Battle Royals as well?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think Trevor Murdoch and Tom Latimer are going to be definitely pretty good in the match, for a match. The only thing I'm wondering, you know, I think the time's going to come when the Rock and Roll Express are going to lose the tag titles back to the Wild Card, because now they got this faction strictly business. I feel like they have to have more gold. And it could definitely and see them go for the tag titles and get them back, but I don't know. Maybe they're going to want to build up Tom Latimer to be like, you know, remember back like with Evolution. I know it's not always equal to compare factions, but just think about it. Triple H was the king with the world title. Batista was to be the future along with Randy Orton, but Randy Orton was seen to be like he was more likely to be the future to present. That's why he was pushed as the next guy with the Intercontinental title and building his way up and eventually winning the world title with Evolution being kicked out the next day, but it still happened. And then Batista, we didn't see him win the world title for like another year, something like that. So I don't know if maybe they're going to be wanting to build up Latimer. The fact that now Strictly Business, the only guy that's going to be in the tournament left is Tom Latimer. They're going to probably want him to stick around. So I'm afraid of the idea of Murdoch losing. And the idea with the Dawsons, the one thing I'm hoping doesn't happen is that these guys think to themselves, oh, let's be smart, and they're going to try to go for a double count out and be like, ha, neither of us lost, we both advanced. And then Marquez comes out and says something like, hey, just want to let you guys know, you guys may have said nobody lost, but nobody won, so you're both eliminated. Like, it's just it just feels like a classic storyline move.
I mean, they can do that. I hope they don't.
Yeah.
But it's a way they can go.
Yeah. It could work in a semifinal match, but not in a quarterfinal.
Yeah. So, but here's another thing. It's an interesting enough premise where I really want to see it next week. I want to see this match. I want to see what these two big bulls, when they get in the ring, against each other are going to look like. So.
Right.
That ought to be pretty cool if they're actually going to get in there and mix it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, brothers do that sort of thing, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. One quick point I want to make, I didn't mention it before. This was the first episode where everything that happened the next night at TV taping, so it's not the night that I was there. So, I mean, there's a couple of things I can think of that happened that they haven't showed yet. Big item, at least one thing, and that had to do with the Circle Squared. They had a Circle Squared match. I don't know if they're going to be airing it on NWA Power just to show it off first before they do it separately. I don't know if it's going to always be part of Power or if it's going to be its own separate series, but they haven't showed that match yet, so I don't know when that's going to be coming out. Next thing that comes up is the next NWA TV title tournament match. Zicky Dice defeating Caleb Conley, 4 minutes and 26 seconds. Something that I didn't notice before, Dave. I don't know if you noticed it. The clock that gives the countdown for the match. If you notice, it's got the NWA Powers logo's outline, the gold outline that's on the logo. And I didn't notice it until now that as the match goes on, it starts disappearing. It's like a clock bar. So it just disappears alongside the countdown. I don't know if you noticed that. I thought that was pretty cool.
Did not notice that. I have to look for that next time.
Yeah, I noticed at the beginning of tonight's Power when they were showing the update with when they were showing the recap from the previous week between Isaacs and Tim Storm, and I saw it was down to like the top left corner, basically down to the bottom. And it had a little bit extra going off. I'm like, man, did they mess up on the editing on that? You know, like, that's not a straight cut bar. That just looks bad. And then I noticed the next clip, and there's even more gone. I'm like, holy shit. And then I watched this match, and I'm like, god damn. So this thing is a countdown bar as well. It's pretty cool. So, Zicky Dice defeats Caleb Conley. He wins with, basically a neck breaker, but onto the shoulder. I don't know if there's a different name for it. But basically a neck breaker onto his shoulder, like a reverse stunner. And I thought it was a pretty good match. I'm really a fan of Zicky Dice, to be honest. I'm a big fan of the outlandish one.
I agree. It was a good little match. Good TV. And the guy that I thought was going to win won. So.
Yeah. I think Zicky will make it to the finals. I mean, at least the final four.
Man.
So, we then come to another promo for High Spots, 1979. This time it's actually Danny Deals, and he ends up getting attacked by all the wrestlers that he's done videos with so far, and promoting High Spots and everything. So, Yeah. I'm wondering when the day's going to come. We're actually going to start seeing Danny Deals at NWA Power. This is going to be a lot of fun. I know you're not a big fan of the Danny Deal commercial, right?
Well, remember, I did find that fast forward button on YouTube.
There you go. Side note as well, everybody, once again, I got to make an announcement. Once again, there was no Tony Falk. I'm starting to get really annoyed. They actually make Tony Falk t-shirts now, but we have no more Tony Falk. What the Falk is going on?
Oh, Tony Falk, dadgummit.
Oh, come on. You know, you got love with Paducah, Kentucky.
Yeah, I hold Paducah, Kentucky in my warm embrace.
You ever been to Paducah?
Been through Paducah.
Okay. See? Shows you didn't hate it. You sounded pretty optimistic when you said that. Like, I've been through Paducah. It was like, yeah, you didn't sound impressed.
Oh, no, I wasn't depressed. Wasn't depressed at all. I was young. Rather young.
Are you trying to make it sound like a young and stupid thing? I was young and stupid. I couldn't help but go to Paducah.
I really didn't have a choice. It was more like a family thing, but my mom had a good friend up in that.
All right.
He had lived together in Florida for a while before my mom married my dad. And we just went up there to visit and actually went to Louisville and went to whatever the town is across the river. And
oh, my God. You know, dude, you've been Kentucky-fied. You called it Louisville.
Louisville.
It's
called Louisville.
I don't care what they say. It's Louisville. That's the way it's pronounced.
Jesus Christ. Please don't be a Yankee. I'm begging you. Don't be a Yankee.
Don't get me wrong. We got to own.
It's called Louisville.
It's Louisville. It's spelled with an S. And the S is,
the S is
silent and treated like an E. Louisville.
I don't care.
His name was not King Louis the 14th. It was King Louis the 14th.
It's Louisville.
It's Louisville.
It's like, you know, people say New Orleans. It's Norlands.
Well, no, but that's a slang. That's taking out the EW from New and just making it Norlands. Same as the fact that people from San Francisco just call it Frisco. You know, that's okay. But there's a difference between making a slang name, like a nickname or something, and just mispronouncing.
All right. Well, here's your next challenge. Your next American vacation is going to be to Louisville, and
exactly.
You go to Louisville, and you just start calling it Louisville to all the natives up there, and you straighten them out.
Well, because
obviously they need to be straightened out.
I already did do that some time back, just not in the city, but my ex is from there, and I told her it's Louisville, and she goes, "No, it's Louisville," and I go, "No, you rednecks don't know how to talk."
Oh, it's just pronounced Louisville.
It's Louisville. But anyway, I'll tell you what is not in Louisville is the next segment, which is an interview with Shooter Stevens and the question mark. And I really like how for a couple of times now, Aaron Stevens, they have him they've had him make a shot towards his past. You know, and he points out the idea, like he said, one thing was, you know, you look at my past, I never really needed a title to be a star. And I don't know, but every time you look at it, it's like whether he was the intellect, which was kind of like a ripoff of the genius Lanny Poffo or Triple H's Connecticut Blue Blood deal of Hunter Hearst Helmsley. You know, that or even being the stunt double. You know, yes, he was tag team champions with The Miz, but he didn't need the belt for that. It just happened to be an extra thing, like an extra prop that went with it because The Miz would wear both real belts and Sandow would wear two toy belts, which was just a fun little deal. But yeah, I just love these things, these pop shots. You know, I don't know what it is. Like, I mean, we could talk about the idea of the Rock and Roll Express, but a lot of their time was in the NWA in any of the territories, so that's okay. You look at somebody who was a world champion like Nick Aldis. He could talk about his time in TNA, but I doubt he's going to do that. But with Aaron Stevens, he makes these small little shots that just instantly remind you of what he used to do. And I don't know why, but I just really like it because it helps remind us where he was and now what he is, you know? I don't know why it just seems different with him. I'm probably stupid for saying that, but it just feels different and better. when he's able to make those reminders, you know?
Well, I mean, and I think it was a damn good interview.
Right.
Dude, that's one of, I can almost assure you, one of the major reasons for hiring Aaron Stevens was to let him talk.
Yeah.
And dude, he had that kind of cold, you know, Hollywood schmuck thing down to a science. He didn't move around a lot. He you know, he was confident, arrogant. He did what he was, exactly what he was supposed to do. And it was pretty damn good. I was impressed.
Yeah. The funny thing was, I was watching this interview and, you know, Aaron Stevens is a heel, you know, I mean, there's no doubt. But when he gave the interview, I don't want to say he was a babyface, but it seemed more like a babyface because, you know, he wasn't taking pop shots at Joe Galli, really. He wasn't trying to undermine him and make him feel inferior. He's taking the questions. He's taking it to heart. He's like, eh, he's almost like, oh, you know, that's a good point. You know, we can go like this and we can go like that. And he just, it felt, it was like a, in other words, I think it goes back to what you just said, the idea of him talking, because I think what's different is when he's confronted by another wrestler, he's the chicken shit heel who wants to not get in the ring as much if he can and hide and pull stuff like that. But when you give him a microphone and you give him an interview and you give him the spotlight, he's comfortable and receptive because the focus is on him. So I think that's why it was more of a relaxed interview, which made me think like a babyface, because you're giving him what he wants. The spotlight, the attention, the camera, the microphone. And that's why it was more of a babyface thing. So it's kind of piggybacking off of what you just said.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely.
The only thing I got a little annoyed with was the question mark. First off, I found it funny that he's wearing shades as well with the mask. That's pretty cool. But he changed it up. It wasn't his. What has it always been, Dave? Aaron Stevens would point out the fact of how he knows Mongrovian karate, and it's no karate. And today, twice, question mark changed it and put two syllables together. Karate. I'm like, no, dude, no. It's three hard syllables, not two fast and one hard. What the fuck? It's like calling Louisville Louisville. It's just not right.
But it is the way it is.
No, just because you do it for 1 week doesn't make it what it is.
It's just, and here again, it goes along with the very relaxed nature of the interview. He felt relaxed enough to not have to punch every syllable, but he could relax through the first two syllables and then just punch up the third, and, you know, very relaxed. You're right. The whole thing just had a relaxed feel.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even think of the idea, like, the relaxed part for the question mark. I guess that's why it could work. I really didn't think that part initially. I think it's because of the fact we have this background with Aaron Stevens going back to the WWE, that's why I'm thinking that point. But with the question mark, he literally is created in the NWA, you know. And quick side note, where's the spiritual advisor? She was the one doing the videos and the promos preparing us for the question mark. Where the fuck is she at?
Unknown. Unknown. She could make an appearance anytime, though.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We're probably going to see her before we ever see freaking Sister Abigail.
Wait, possibly.
Yeah. So, moving on, we then come to a match between Thunder Rosa and ODB. Side note, everybody, like I said earlier, I was doing my best trying to count the live numbers of people, so I didn't really focus on the clock of how long each match was. You know, Ziggy Dyson, Caleb Conley was easy. It was a match with a clock. So it's not hard to just take the start time and the end time and just plus minus. I mean, I know I'm not worth a lot of things, everybody, but my basic math skills is worth something. You know, it's worth at least $3.
There you go.
But Thunder Rosa defeats ODB. I did really enjoy this match. It definitely felt like a mindset of two near equals. And I say it like that because the fact you could tell that, you know, I don't know if it has to do with the idea of age or anything like that, you know. But, you know, we look at, like, you know, ODB, you know, I'm with Jenkins. I think she's still gorgeous and sexy, even with the way she dresses and looks and everything. I think she's great looking. I love that look of her. She's 41 years old. You look at Thunder Rosa. Side note, ODB, I'm looking at it right now, ODB's birthday is only a week away from mine. So, like, that's awesome. I would love to celebrate our birthdays together and then send the pictures to Jenkins and make him want to kill me. But Thunder Rosa is 33 years old. Now, 8 years is not the biggest age difference. We're not talking like Ricky Starks and Ricky Morton, you know. But still, it's showing the idea of, okay, Thunder Rosa is a beast. Thunder Rosa is agile. Thunder Rosa is a monster in making in some aspects, you know. And ODB is the older, crustier veteran. Crusty in the fact that she's, you know, she's not prim and proper and polished. She's herself. And she's an outdoorsy redneck girl, country style folk. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why we love her. But it definitely, while it definitely felt like two equal strengths facing off against each other compared to, say, a Thunder Rosa and Ashley Vox match, with ODB, you could just tell it's like, okay, they're trying to make it, they tried to make it look a little bit more of the shine on Thunder Rosa and to show Thunder Rosa as the stronger one. Not just because of the idea that she won the match, but just in general. You know what I mean? What did you think?
I never in the match got the impression of big woman versus little woman.
I wasn't trying to think of like that.
Well, you know, because you look at it, Thunder Rosa's not the biggest of the women wrestlers. And while, of course, she's not the biggest either, ODB is a healthily sized woman. But when I was watching the match, it never hit me. Oh, well, you know, poor Thunder Rosa, she's got to go up against this big old gal. I just, every kick, every punch that Thunder Rosa threw, I thought, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, Thunder Rosa is a fighter.
Right.
You know, she's a trained ring fighter, and ODB is a trained bar fighter.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was meaning was, I mean, yeah. I wasn't talking like the idea that, okay, ODB is going to overpower her in size. I was talking like, okay, you know, she's not as skinny. She's got a little weight on her. I mean, she's only three. I'm looking at right now the build info. Thunder Rosa's 5'3" and ODB's 5'6", which also, side note, bonus. I love a girl who's shorter than me. But I was just meaning the idea, like, okay, she's bigger. And the fact of the idea is some weight. According to this, the build weights as well. Thunder Rosa, at least, is a little bit more accurate due to her recent MMA fight, 113 pounds. ODB used to be billed at 130 pounds. I'm willing to bet that that was pre-plastic surgery, if you will. But, yeah. I wasn't trying to say, like, okay, ODB is going to overpower. I was saying the idea, like, just bigger girls and older and crustier. So, you know, you got the younger Thunder Rosa who can overpower her.
I really liked this, the match. I did. I thought it was a damn good women's match and very hard hitting. And as you had mentioned, Thunder Rosa came out on top.
Yeah. She won with the double stomp to the back.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, just it was a good match. It was a damn good match.
Was that move ever something back in the territory days, Dave? Or was that something like a youngish move, the stomp?
I think the stomp off the top rope, even off the second rope, is relatively new. Yeah. I don't remember ever seeing that.
I mean, I know Dudley did it, but
you would see guys jump off the ropes and like jump on guys' hands.
Right. Yeah.
But you see them jump on their back. I never saw that.
Yeah. See, like, I'm not a fan of the move. You know, when Finn Balor does that move, Prince Devitt, I'm not a fan. I just don't think it's, like, that legit. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe it's possible you could do that in a way and it will hurt a guy's back, no doubt. But you're not going to immediately go down and then just be able for a pin. You're going to be clutching your back and in pain or something if it was something like what I'm talking. So I've just never been a big fan of that move is all. I'd rather see her do a super kick, even though if she'd be like the 27th person to use that as a finishing move. at least a super kick I can believe. I mean, a kick to the freaking chin, you know, right into the face, knocks him out. Can easily believe gotcha. That.
I got you. Okay.
So, I know, I'm probably nitpicking. But one thing I'm not going to be nitpicking too much is, I mean, who knows? Maybe we could be nitpicking. I mean, Dave, I mean, here's a quick question. Would you want to date Thunder Rosa or ODB?
Well, of course.
Would you ever want to? Would you ever want to be proud enough to at least even say that they were your ex?
Sure.
Sure.
I guess that'd be okay.
Yeah. So like,
at least twisted.
Well, I think because of the idea that, you know, hey, maybe things ended up bad enough, but you could at least say, hey, I dated ODB. You know, which you could then, because then if she's your ex, or maybe better yet, maybe you have a kid with her. You know, have some offspring.
Well, hang on a second. Hang on a second. We just broke up. Let's not bring the children into this.
Well, I'm saying maybe she was pregnant before the breakup, and you just didn't know.
Oh,
you know, I'm just saying. And if you now what you're saying, oh dear Lord, maybe that's going to cause problems. Maybe you don't want to talk to her on the phone because you know it's just going to lead to fights. You know what you can do? You can get some help with the Rock and Roll Express hotline. Call 1-1-800-ROCK-ROLL. And they can help you out. Do you have problems with your baby mama, with your ex-girlfriend, maybe even with your current wife? You can call the Rock and Roll Express, and they will take that phone call for you. You just call them up, give them the name and number of that woman, and they will pick up the phone, and they will talk to them on your behalf and fix any and all problems you got. Rock and roll style. They've been fixing these problems on their own since 1983, and they will fix your problems in 2020. What say you, Dave?
Fast. Forward.
Really?
Really.
Did you actually fast forward?
Yep.
Damn it.
I did.
Oh, come on.
I saw the match ended, and they were going into it, and I didn't know, you know, so I kind of went, and I stopped for a second. And when I stopped, Robert Gibson said, roll. And that only country roll voice of his. And I thought, okay. So I finished fast forwarding it. I'm sure it was hilarious. And if it comes on again, I will stop and watch it. I'll try. I'm really trying. I'm trying here, man. I'm really trying here.
Can you do me a favor?
I'll try.
Can you just go back and watch that clip, just that skit, that portion, and just enjoy it and tell me what you thought?
When do you want me to do this?
I mean, if you want to do it now, I mean, we can play the Jeopardy music for a minute while you listen to it. But I mean, if you want to do it afterwards, then there you go.
I'll tell you what, if you got some Jeopardy music, I'll go watch it real quick.
Okay. Now I'm going to have to...
You'll figure something out. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I got the perfect thing to use as instead of Jeopardy music, I'm going to use this Ricky Starks' music. Vice theme that he's got going on. Dave, you're listening. Just let me know when you're back and you're ready to go, and we will go do it. Let me just cover this back up. Little bit of a detour, everybody. Let me try to pull up some of that music again. I'll get all over again just for you sweet people.
Johnny?
Yes? Did you watch it?
You there, Johnny?
Yes.
Okay. I watched it.
And?
Would it make you happy if I said I loved it?
Yes.
I loved it.
It would make me happy if you meant it.
Oh, man, now you're just putting all kinds of conditions on things. I don't know. That's some really heavy expectations you're laying on there, dude. It was okay. I mean, for what it was okay. I understand now why I probably skipped through it first time. It was okay. Call the Rock and Roll Express with your problems. 1-800-ROCK-ROLL.
Well, no, 1-1-800-ROCK-ROLL.
1-1-800-ROCK-ROLL. That's
it.
Yeah.
That's right.
The nine-time NWA World Heavyweight Champions are going to be talking
heavyweight
to
tag team champions.
Heavyweight tag team champions are going to be talking to people about their baby mama issues. Okay. All right. I'm going to do my very best to love it. I'm going to work on it every day. Oh, we have more show to talk about.
Yes, we do, but I'm just glad you took your time. You know, I think we could, last point, I think we could both agree the Rock and Roll Express always deserves more airtime. And if that includes us giving more airtime and you going back to watch their hotline to come back and talk about it, they're deserving of that. They've earned that shit.
Well, I can't disagree with that. They have earned that, so there they go. There they go. I am paid in full now.
But one thing that's also been earned, as much as you may not like it, everybody, is the world's heavyweight champion, Nick Aldis, coming out and getting some airtime as he conducts an interview. Some of the finer points he does. One of the things I loved is he said, you know, I didn't lie. Camille isn't my insurance policy anymore. She is now a member of Strictly Business. It's like, oh, okay, what a douche. But he clarified things, so technically he didn't lie on that part. He's like, I didn't lie. I told you the truth. So, which basically means she's also a full equal. Not that I ever felt that he was actually treating her subpar for the most part. But, yeah. I thought overall pretty good interview. I love the fact that people were making shots at him that he couldn't last 6 minutes because the idea, like, okay, talking about the idea of 6 minutes or 5 seconds for the TV title tournament. And he's like, the idea of me just do wrestling for 6 minutes, like, the only place that I can't get the job done in 6 minutes is the bedroom. And I can't tell you, I was live there watching YouTube. We were all hitting posts and everything about, call Mickey James, get her. Uh-huh. You know, he's giving her some of that national treasure. She's showing him some hardcore country. It's like, like a couple of juveniles. We were all going at it on that one. But, I mean, it was a hot shot quote he said. So he knew it was going to carry on like that.
Sure.
Which actually led... what I love to an exhibition match between him and Ricky Starks in what they called a 605 match. He decided to do the match to show how he could have been in the tournament, and he faced off against a guy who's advanced in the tournament, Ricky Starks, in what they call a 605 match. I gotta be honest, Dave, I really loved this. Not just for the match, we'll get into that. I love the idea this is being treated as a full stipulation idea of a match. You know, I know we're expecting it in the TV title tournament. I know we don't know if when the television title is being defended, if it's going to be defended in 6 minutes and 5 seconds every time. But the concept of the fact that the NWA can have its own simple stipulation of a match being a 605 match, I love that because it's creative, it's simple, it's a time limit that can be reasonably done. And it's something that can be unique unto the NWA. You know, they have created their own stipulation all ready for a special kind of match that can be done whenever. I challenge you to a match. It's like, okay, but you're not worth too much of my time. So you know what you could be worth? 6 minutes and 5 seconds. So I challenge you to a 6:05 match. I really like this concept now of the idea of calling it a 6:05 match.
It's a good idea. Because think about it, dude. It's a perfect length for TV, especially for a one-hour TV show. It's a perfect length. Oh, yeah. Dude, if they could start using that in different ways, I think that'd be a great addition to what they do with their matches.
Yeah. You know, I remember I used to watch TNA Impact on when it was on the Fox Sports Net and the early time on Spike TV, where they would have all these different... They had a news feed on the bottom and showing the stuff kind of like an ESPN kind of thing, kind of because they were on Fox Sports Net, so they had it like that too. And what do you call it? You know, they would have the news feed of like some information on some things going on in TNA storylines, some of the recent matches that have happened, matches throughout the night, all this kind of stuff. I miss that kind of stuff. I wish we'd see more. I've seen it in the NWA or even elsewhere, but they had a time limit, and they would show the time limit going on for the match as well. So it just made me think a little bit of that. Granted, this stuff goes back to the past, of course, so I'm not saying it was just that, but I just remembered that. So, and like you said, I mean, it's something that can be done within an hour show. But the only way this can actually work in my mind is if they do what they did tonight. They had a really good match. They showed why Nick Aldis picked Ricky Starks as his first draft pick in the NWA. He definitely is like showing why he's going to be the future of the NWA. In my opinion, he's going to be one of their pioneers. He had some great spots. You know, he had a close chance of a roll up on Aldis, and I thought, oh my God, is he going to steal the victory? Came close. In the end, I look at it thinking like, okay, you know, probably not because he was a world's champion, but for a moment I believed. And then they got into the Texas Cloverleaf for the very end, and for a whole minute, Ricky Starks fought it off. He kept fighting. He dealt with the pain. He started fighting his way over to the rope, and then it led to a draw. And the match ended with a draw. So the 6:05 match I can definitely enjoy and like. The one thing I hope is that if they do a time limit match like a 6:05, 10 minutes, it can end sooner. 20 minutes, obviously. 30 minutes, Ironman match, stuff like that. A 6:05 match, there's got to be some matches that end in a draw, is my personal opinion, though. I mean, I just talked up the entire idea, and I love the concept. I'm just saying it needs to have a couple of draws. And I love the fact that the maiden voyage, if you will, for this match, because it's the first one outside of the TV title tournament, the maiden voyage of the 6:05 match ended in a draw, into the concept that I'm saying. And... Mm-hmm. It not only worked for the idea of the believability, okay, it didn't turn into a squash match, because that's one of the things I worry about when a match ends so early, is like, okay, is it kind of a squash? I mean, it makes sense with some guys. Zane Dawson on, say, Sal Renaro, obviously. Braun Strowman on James Ellsworth, we remember that. And et cetera. But the fact that the match ends in a draw makes sense to me, and it definitely did good in this case, because it built Ricky Starks as... Granted, maybe not as a winner, of course, but definitely as surviving the fight. And that was the good thing, and that's what built up Ricky Starks for the storyline.
Dude, I agree 100%. The idea was simple. You know, your big bad guy, world heavyweight champion, is going to show this young upstart, a guy who he's been touting since pretty much the very beginning of the show as one of the future stars of professional wrestling, and says that, you know, if he can't handle this guy in 6 minutes, you know, he can't handle anybody. Well, he handles him pretty well, but he can't pin him in the 6 minutes and 5 seconds. It goes to a draw. Nick Aldis gets to save face. He doesn't lose. Ricky Starks gets knocked up another rung on the ladder because he doesn't lose. He hangs on to the very end, gets a time limit draw called, and has Nick Aldis standing in the ring cutting promos on him, saying, look, I just made this kid. What else do you want me to do? I'm not going to wrestle him for five. And that's when, of course, Ricky Morton comes out. and starts calling for the five more minutes.
Yeah.
And with the five more minutes, he's egging Nick Aldis on with the five more minutes. And Nick Aldis being that, you know, now he's gone just a little bit past being just the gentleman heel. Now he's just heeling full time, just big time. No, I'm not going to do it. I don't need to, you know, I'm not going to wrestle him for five more minutes. And then even Ricky Morton challenges him, and he says, no, I'm not going to wrestle you either, which is going to lead to something a little bit later on.
Right.
I like the way this show is flowing.
Oh, yeah.
That show had a very nice flow, how one thing could go into another, and things just kind of all leading to an inevitable.
The one thing I got to disagree with you on, maybe not disagree, but I guess a little bit of a point, is, you know, you said that Nick Aldis saves face and everything, and Ricky Starks didn't lose. I'm looking at it as a different idea. To me, in the end, this was more of a gain for Ricky Starks. It was a point or two off for Nick Aldis. Not in general, I'm not saying like that, but now, Ricky Starks, he didn't lose the match, but by surviving, it's a victory in and of itself. You know, he survived the clock, he beat the clock, and it was the clock against the world's heavyweight champion. So to me, that's a victory in itself. Like, you look back, I mean, I know it's a pretty corny example, but I'm thinking back to, like, what was it, was it SummerSlam or Survivor Series? I think it was SummerSlam 1993, when Lex Luger beat Yokozuna, the WWF world champion, by count out, and he acts like celebrating and everything, breaking out the champagne and stuff, that like as if he became the champion. And I know many people have critiqued that and criticized that and thought stupid, but he beat the champion nonetheless, and he didn't win the belt, but it was kind of like that, is that, okay, he gained some points, which is what led to the idea that, hey, he's actually going to win the championship at WrestleMania 10, which we know didn't happen. But just trying to get into that point. Sorry. It's just making me think like that, is with Ricky Starks, he's gaining points for having survived the world champion and not losing. And in Nick Aldis's case, he loses points. Like, if him not winning, even though it's a draw, it's a loss. He didn't lose the match. He doesn't have that as an L on his record. He didn't lose the title, but he didn't gain a W. And when you're the world's champion, a win is a win, and anything less is not a win. You know what I mean? Not that he loses face with the fans. It's just the idea in general, like, that's how it's got to be treated, you know?
Well, and I see your point. I do. I'm there again. I don't agree. I think he came out as – he went in strong. He came out strong. He just had to heal on the kid for a little bit to be able to walk out of the ring just as strong as he came in. And he did his job. He did it very well. And if you'll notice, Ricky Stark didn't say a word. Why didn't he say a word? Because he had just had the hell beaten out of him by right. The world heavyweight champion.
But he started having, like, that anger in his face, like, when Ricky Morton came out and saying to give him the extra 5 minutes. He's got the energy built up, like, it looks like in his face, like, yeah, give me the extra five. And I'm looking at going, give it to him! Damn it, give him that 5 minutes!
I knew he... I immediately knew that he wasn't getting 5 minutes. The match was over. All this was done. He was finished.
See, I thought it was possible, and the one reason... Nick Aldis has been a tweener until he finally went heel and created Strictly Business. You know, he'd do some heel things, but he was the gentleman's heel. You know, like you mentioned, he was respectful to Tim Storm and everything. But even since turning heel, he's talked up Ricky Starks. And if there was anybody that he would possibly give more time to, it would be his first draft pick. And so when it was Ricky Starks, if it was Ricky Morton, no. If it was Tim Storm, no. He's mentioned him. The past is the past. But that's the key thing right there. He's said that he's done with Tim Storm because he's the past, and the past is the past. Ricky Starks, he's outright said, is the future. So that's why for the minute, I was believing that it could happen, because if he was going to do it for anybody, it was going to be Ricky Starks.
I'll say that I didn't think so. I thought that what happened was exactly what was going to happen. So I was thrilled by it. I really loved it.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. We then come back. There was no football commercial, everybody, for the whole concussions thing for flag football under 14. That was a surprise. A lot less ads, actually, today, if I think about it, Dave. I mean, there was a Rock and Roll Express hotline, and there was the Danny Deals High Spots. Other than that, there was, like, maybe one or two things where they promoted Hard Times and the ticket sales, and that was it. It was actually much more about in the studio than normal, you know. So I was really surprised by that. So we'd have, like, one segment in the studio, and then we'd go to, like, a break, and we'd come back to immediately after, you know. So I was, like, really surprised. We come to the main event of the night. It's supposed to be a triple threat tag team match with James Storm and Eli Drake versus Colt Cabana and Mr. I don't have the voice. I'm sick right now, so I'm not going to do it. But Ken Anderson and the wild card. Well, as they call out for the wild card twice, they don't show up, so the match gets turned into a regular tag team match. Personally, I think it was a smart move. I mean, they were already going over time as is, so they were probably already thinking kind of like that, but it just goes into the storyline of what it was. And it led to a really good tag team match. I don't know if it would have... It probably would have been really good as a triple threat tag team match, but I think it was just less cluttered, you know, and it led to a really good tag team match between these guys. What do you think?
I thought it was a good tag team match as well. Very surprised by the finish. Very surprised.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the DQ?
Hmm?
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, think about it.
It does. It really makes sense.
The way the match was originally intended, I mean, think about it, guys. You have the one babyface-ish tag team in Eli Drake and James Storm. I mean, the guy was a heel for the longest time, but since losing the national title, it's like, the second you don't have any gold, you start feeling like a good person all over again. So he's been starting to become a babyface slowly, ironically. Maybe we got to put the TV title on him so we can see him as an asshole again. The heel tag team, which is the wild card, and then the tweener team, if you will. Babyface Colt Cabana, you know, even though he's defending Ken Anderson, Colt Cabana's been a babyface the whole time. I mean, there's no change in that anytime soon. So Colt Cabana, I mean, he is, you know, he's the babyface and Ken Anderson's the heel. But they're babyface and a heel that are friends and work together and they'll defend each other, you know. So the idea of this match ending the way it did, you know, it makes sense because the guy who caused it is the one guy who's actually a heel in the match. So I thought it was a really good match and everything. And then, you know, Anderson comes in to break up the pinfall and leads to grabbing the referee and causes the DQ. And definitely an abrupt ending, but at least it led to a good post-match segment. Which, before we do that, just any other words you have for the match?
It surprised by the ending, but the whole thing between Ken Anderson and Colt Cabana after the match, I like that. That was good.
Do you think it's going to lead to a match between the two of them? Like, why do I defend you? Why am I bothering, wasting my time? You know,
it makes sense.
See, I hope not, and the reason is because I like some of the tag teams that are being made in the NWA. They got a strong tag team division. You know, you got the Rock and Roll Express, you got the Wild Card, you've got the Dawsons, you've got Eddie Kingston and Homicide. All of these teams so far make sense. Royce Isaacs and Latimer didn't make sense, but they built themselves up on the indie scene before NWA power. So they already came as the established tag team champions. Rock and Roll Express, obviously. The Dawsons, you know, these guys are brothers, at least storyline. And then you've got Eddie Kingston and Homicide. These guys have been wrestling for a long time together. You know, Jersey All Pro Wrestling, you guys can look back in history and see them. They were tag team champions there. You know, there was a reason why. You know, they did the whole thing with the OGs, with Eddie Kingston and Homicide and Hernandez as the OGs LAX and everything back in... And everything they were doing and shit back in Impact Wrestling. But then you look at some of these tag teams, Eli Drake trying to make a tag team with anybody, and he's got one right now with James Storm. Whether it's going to last or if he's going to float around, we'll see. So it's like the idea, like, okay, there's a wild card. Is it going to be fully with James Storm, or is he going to keep floating around trying to find somebody else? That's a mystery. Colt Cabana and Ken Anderson, the very first time they came out, I said it was a surprise because it was two guys you didn't immediately think about. You know, you got Colt Cabana from Chicago, Ken Anderson from Wisconsin. I mean, okay, two states that border each other. It's like 4 hours apart between the two towns. But, I mean, it just, you never, they didn't have a past. They didn't have a background. They're not going off as a tag team name like the Midwest Wrecking Crew or anything like that. You know, so I like the idea of Colt Cabana and Ken Anderson because they're not like each other. They're not two shooters. They're not two luchadors. You got one nitty-gritty, pure serious brawler in Ken Anderson and one comedic, having fun, technical wrestler in Colt Cabana. And I want to keep that tag team because you got two guys who are former World's Heavyweight Champions in their own rights, Colt Cabana with the NWA and Ken Anderson with TNA. And, you know, two established guys, two former world champions that are making a successful tag team. I don't want to see that go away because they're two unlikely guys working together that built up. It's kind of like Rated RKO, if you think about it, in a weird sense to compare.
I'd really like to see the match. I would. As a tag team, they're okay. They haven't really been heating my feet up. I get your point. I think it'd be a pretty good pairing, but I also equally think that they could have a nice little feud. You know, we were friends and now we're not friends. It's an old wrestling trope as old as professional wrestling in America, but it works. And I think the way they're building it right now, if they do split up and have a match, get into a fight, I'd like to see that.
If they stay together,
and that's cool. But if they do follow the course they're following and split up and end up in a match, I think that's an excellent choice. Excellent. I would look forward to that.
See, I don't disagree with you on that sense because I do believe, like you, that the match will be great. I think it would be a good match. So I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But my thinking is, I mean, you mentioned like the idea of the age-old trope. Here's the one thing I'm thinking of, though, is the age-old trope of splitting a tag team. You know, these guys have been a tag team since, what, episode 2? Something like that, maybe? Well, episode 3 of Power, you know? So we're talking 9 to 10 weeks, at least on TV, that they've been a tag team. You know, these guys could go so much farther. Whether or not they could put the belts on them, you know, I'd love to see that too, but at least that's something. I feel like when it starts getting to the point like, okay, we're starting to run out of things for this tag team, and it's getting to the point, okay, it's not going over so well, so what do? We'll go back to the age-old trip of splitting the tag team and making them fight each other. We can get at least a few more months of storyline out of these guys before they go on their separate ways. And I just feel like the Mr. Boom Boom tag team just can do so much more for the time before actually going back off on their own. And whether it's Colt going back for the national title or Ken Anderson going for the TV title or either of them going for the world's title, I feel like we can get much more out of this tag team before the match and the feud, which could last maybe a month or so, maybe 2 months if they're lucky, you know?
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, what we can see at least is, you know, this abrupt ending of a match, and it's like even pointing out that the clock's almost up and the match is, and the night's basically done by the announcers. What happens? Well, we gotta have some business to take care of. Strictly Business, to be exact. And so Strictly Business comes out. And Nick Aldis comes out, and he calls out the Rock and Roll Express, specifically Ricky Morton, and Robert Gibson follows, of course, because they're brothers. They come out, and Nick Aldis basically points out the whole match that Ricky Morton are challenging for, and basically said to him that you can have the match, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be Team Aldis versus Team Morton. And if you're, I really thought this was going to lead to a retirement match, to be honest, Dave. That's what I thought it was going to be, but they didn't put that stipulation up. But the stipulation was, if your team wins, you get a shot at the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, which I'd love to see in history if Ricky Morton ever got a shot for the World Heavyweight Championship. I'd love to see if that was ever a thing. You get some wrestlers, they just never had a shot, period. Even if they were on that pedestal. I mean, the Rock and Roll Express were always on that pedestal, but as a tag team, you know. So I'd love to see if he ever did wrestle for the World Heavyweight Championship.
Ricky Morton wrestled Ric Flair at a Starrcade, I think. And in fact, they did several matches on a Starrcade tour with Ricky Morton wrestling Flair for the World Heavyweight title.
Let's see.
They had the big match they had was in a cage in a baseball field.
Ah, that's some some Puerto Rico style stuff. I like that. Puerto Rico still does their wrestling events at baseball stadiums. Okay, here we go. I'm seeing July 11th, 1986, they faced off at Charlotte, North Carolina in a cage match. I don't know if it's for the championship, but I do see Ric Flair versus Ricky Morton for the world championship, not in a steel cage match. So the match did definitely happen. April 12th, 1986. So that throws away everything I was saying.
I remember seeing that match. It was great. Ricky Morton had the broken nose, and he had the thing on across his face, and the face guard. Yeah, it was good. It was a good match.
Okay. Well, I can tell you this, guys. I hate the fact of saying this because I don't like it when these guys get views on their YouTube. But WWE does the championship match, not in a cage match, April 12th, 1986, on their YouTube. So you just type in Ricky Morton versus Ric Flair versus Ricky Morton, NWA World Championship. Oh, NWA World Championship Wrestling. That's what that match was. This one, though, the one I'm seeing for the cage match. It's with Japanese commentary. This is the one that they sent over to be watched by the people in New Japan, I believe, or All Japan, whichever one it was. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. So there you go. So if he wins the match, he will get a shot for the title. Nick Aldis points out that he does not want either of them to be in the match because that way there could be no chance of Ricky Morton losing the match and then making the excuse, well, I was tired and beaten up from that match, you know. So that makes a surprise because now it's like, okay, who's Ricky Morton going to pick? He's like, oh, okay, obviously you're going to pick Robert Gibson. I expected that. So then it's like, okay, two other guys. But the whole episode, the title of tonight's episode was Who's the Third Man, Brother? So, which was a weird title. I didn't think it was good to say that because we're watching the entire episode and some of us wondering what the meaning of that title was. And now we know it goes to that. But I felt it revealed too much, you know, like the idea, like, okay, now we know where it's coming from. I just feel like it should have been something else. But that's just nitpicking. We get the announcement. Okay, so he's going to be picking the wild card and then one other person to be in the match. To face off against Team Morton. And who's that person? The guy who lives like 30 miles north of Atlanta, Georgia, living over in Acworth, Georgia, home to his restaurant of Shoney's. And I've been there twice now, and I've enjoyed both times. None other than Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner himself. And they played his music and everything, and he came out. It's the only time they've actually played music on NWA Power, so I thought that was great. I'm like, okay, they need to do this from now on. When they're going to be debuting a wrestler at NWA Power, they should play the music like that because it treats it extra special of the idea of this guy debuting, whoever it is. You know what I mean?
I do.
So what do you think of the idea of the fact they picked Scott Steiner?
This isn't going to be very popular. But when I saw it, I went, why? Why him? Why Scott Steiner?
I think
I've seen Scott Steiner in both of his primes. You know, he was one of the greatest tag team wrestlers ever. That run he had in WCW, he established himself as a strong singles guy. A body guy and Let me see him in the ring. Once I see him in the ring, I'll be able to tell more. But I don't think I felt the pop that a lot of other people felt when he walked in the room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just,
oh, okay. See, Scott Steiner.
See, for me, I got a pop, and I'll admit it's due to some biases. Scott Steiner was my favorite wrestler back when I watched WCW. You know, even though he was a heel, I was a big fan of his. I believe in this guy. When you hear about people, you know, like a Vince Russo or others who say that you look at a guy and you say he's larger than life and you can see this guy's a wrestler, this guy's a champion. To me, Big Papa Pump was it. Like I remember seeing, like, things of Hulk Hogan, like promos from Hulk Hogan 98, 99 when I watched WCW. And then it's like, what do you call them, the 24-inch Patriots or whatever. And then you look at Scott Steiner, and he was using something like that. You know, what was his saying? Like, what was it, 24-inch arms and stuff like that. I was like, this guy's bigger than Hulk Hogan's arms. And this guy's a beast. This guy's a behemoth. The belief and the rumor that he supposedly beat Will Chamberlain's record of sleeping with 10,000 women. Scott Steiner's one of the few guys I could ever believe would ever be able to come close to that, let alone beating the record. I'll admit that. You know, I've always been a big fan of Scott Steiner. He's one of my favorites. You know, in the NWA alone, I pulled this up when I made a post about it. Scott Steiner in the NWA alone, this is what they can go off of. This guy held the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team title with Rick Steiner. He held the NWA World Tag Team title one time with Rick Steiner, and they were one of the last tag teams, and then I think they lost. They were the first tag team to win the belts after they became the WCW World Tag Team titles. You know, like, they lost the belts, went through, I think, the Doom, and then they were vacated and went to somebody else, I think, and then Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner won them afterwards, but they were already WCW. These guys are also the last ever NWA United States Tag Team Champions. They were the last ever for those belts. No other wrestler held them under the NWA name. They became the WCW U.S. Tag Team titles after that for the short stint that they existed for after that. That's just talking under the NWA banner. So there's a lot that they can work off of and go from there. So, I mean, I thought that... So, I mean, just to me, I've got a biases for him. I think he could still go. I think he's still a beast and a behemoth. He's gotten older, and you guys look and notice he's got more tattoos and everything covering up to cover the fact that he's gotten older. He wears a shirt more now when he wrestles because it covers up his stomach and everything and his chest. But, I mean, you look at Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. Scott Steiner is fivefold more fit than them and can still keep going. And, you know, I'm really a big fan of his, and I will continue to be a fan. I would love to see Rick Steiner as well back just because I'm a fan of the Steiner brothers. So, yeah, like you said, we'll have to see how he is in the ring, but I'm going to be biased always because of that.
I got you. I understand completely. I do.
Yeah. So, not to mention he's one of the only guys to be WCW Grand Slam champion, having held the TV, US, and World Heavyweight titles as well. So, yeah, I'll talk that up. But one thing I can talk about, a talk up that's not going to piss Dave off, is our stars. And that is the ratings that we give off for our stars. Dave, what would you rate in stars out of 10? What's your star ratings for today? And today's for the record, if you want to change it up, and like there was a couple of weeks ago, I think we changed it. What did we change it up from? They weren't stars. What did we do?
Oh, man, I don't remember.
The Mercuries. That's right. We did, like, Mercuries. I don't know if you want to do something like that, like change it up. Like, go Rhode Island style and rate them by clams.
That's okay. Stars are good for me.
Yeah, because you come from a Lone Star State.
I love stars. This one I'm going to give a 7. But a strong 7. I don't think I was like as motivated as a lot of people at the very end of the show, and I was kind of like, "Oh, okay." So I'm giving it a 7 this week.
All right, me, I'm honestly going to have to give it an 8. I even wrote that. You know, people started giving their ratings in the chat on YouTube after the match at the show, and on the last segment. One guy was enough of a dick to give it a 6.5. It's like, yeah, well, we don't want you anyway. But no, I wrote in the chat on YouTube. I said I gave it an 8 out of 10. I mean, there's a number of reasons. You know, I thought to get the comedy part out, you know, I mean, like, I joke about the fact that I miss Tony Falk. And honestly, I think those ads are good, and I'd love to see some updates. I'd love to see some new Austin Idol stuff, you know. You know, when we kept seeing the Universal Wrestling College, and then he comes out with his kayfabe cocktail. It's like, oh, man, this is going to be cool, because we're going to see a bunch of different kind of ads with Austin Idol. This will be fun. And, you know, so it was the hokiness and the comedy like that. Well, we got a little bit of the hokiness, but a lot of the good comedy with the Rock and Roll Express Hotline. So I thought that was good in that aspect. The matches were great. The interview that they did, like, with Stevens and the question mark was great. They did a lot of building up that they got going on. They gave a lot of updates for the TV title tournament, showing us now, okay, we're going to be having two surprise entrants coming in at some point. And they had Tim Storm break it out there. Like, okay, they didn't have the announcers break it up, bring it out there. It was Tim Storm in the middle of the chat. Like, hey, sneak this part in there. And I thought that was smart and good, because we already got our eyes glued to him as is while he's talking, because of the storylines going on. And the way they did with Scott Steiner, not just because of the idea of me being a Scott Steiner fan, but they have him come out, they get the lights going for him, they got the music playing. That's how you make a surprise debut, even on NWA Power. I personally feel they should have done that with Thunder Rosa. I think they should have been able to do that to a point with Melina. I mean, they did that kind of stuff at Into the Fire, but everybody got their entrances and their intro music and everything. And that's not a knock, like, you know, someone like ODB. It was a surprise, without a doubt, when she came out. And same with Marty Scurll. But that's how you do a surprise debut, is that you beat it. You know, I remember talking about that with you when it came to music and stuff, was, you know, I said they should have it at least even for the champions when they're coming out. And it's like, okay, they treated it like a very special thing. They have not done any music. If you don't count the drum thing for Thunder Rosa, they haven't done any music or anything for any of the wrestlers on NWA Power. And now they do it for the first time with Scott Steiner's surprise debut. That's how you do a surprise debut. You make it that extra special. You go over the top. And so I felt that in all those aspects, and you could have done it with anybody else. If they'd done that with Luke Hawks, you know, people have seen him wrestle. If they had done it with Nikita Koloff, they should have had him had music play for him when he came out, you know. So stuff like that. So I got to give it an 8.
There you go. All right.
So definitely a longer episode than expected, everybody. We're already past 91 minutes, coming up to 92. Go figure.
And tonight's episode was 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, it went over a little bit, so I get it.
Well, yeah. So, exactly. So, I hope everybody enjoyed themselves. You know, I see that we got Lucy Birch in the chat. I wonder who that is. I wonder if there's any relation to Luke. Gee, hint and wink, wink. Go from there. I'm just mentioning it out because, you know, new name, new-ish, I should say. You know, Birch, not new for us. Much love. But if you guys enjoyed this, quick plugs, check out our Facebook page, WNC Network. Check out our Twitter, at the WNC Network. Jenkins announced his new Twitter today, right? Was it at WNC Jenkins _ something like that?
It's Jenkins _WNC.
There you go.
Jenkins _WNC.
I'm not a fan of the underscores. The hyphens at least make sense.
I don't think you can use. Can you use a hyphen? Hyphen. Good God Almighty! Can you use a hyphen in a Twitter address?
Do you have a hymen? Did you win the Heisman?
maybe you can. Maybe you can win your Heisman with your Twitter address. I don't know that either. But I know in Jenkins' case, it's Jenkins _WNC, and of course, there's the at in front of all that. So, but you guys are all social media savvy. Guys and gals, you'll figure it out easily.
Yeah, I don't have Twitter, so I don't know. Go to our website, wnc.world. I love that domain name. Support us on our Patreon account. It's a new year, so new chances to get into a tournament. We're going to be having the tournament pretty soon. I'm crossing the T's, dotting the I's, or should I say crossing the I's and dotting the T's, and trying to see when to start booking the judges and the competitors for this. So I hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. Am I missing anything, Dave?
Don't think so.
There's always something. I mean, check out all the different various shows within the WNC Network.
Oh, wait. Whoa, we did miss something.
What's that?
Star of the night.
Go on.
Standout. Standout of the night.
Oh, my God. I forgot that. The star of the night. I can't believe
yeah.
that. Oh, there you go. The MVP of the week.
MVP. Thank you very much. So there you go.
I can't believe we
and
got
I'll,
that.
I'll get mine right now. Because I think that, you know, this guy was dominant in this show, and his MVP tonight is Nick Aldis.
Really?
That was his show.
Yeah, he came out like three times.
Exactly. That was his show tonight, and every time he was out, he was good. They're letting him cut loose and do his thing, and I'm digging it.
I'm not going to dispute it with you on that. I'm going to go to the other turnbuckle. In the very same case of what you just picked, and I'm picking Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks, I gotta go for as my MVP because of that match, because of what he did. You know, you look at how that match went, and that match symbolized everything for Ricky Starks in the end. I know he's been picked as a MVP before. I'm trying to see if maybe if I picked him. I believe I
think
did.
I think me and you both may have picked him once.
Let's see. I'm literally looking back at my notes to see what I've got for who was the MVPs of the night. Wow, I used to do a lot of notes. I used to write down. I picked him in week five, definitely. You picked him week four. And then doesn't look like that happened before that. So, yeah. So you and I have both picked him. So now I've picked him. Another, but you know, I just thought that match was really good. Like I mentioned, the idea of him—he didn't win the match, but he survived the match against the world's heavyweight champion, and that alone is a victory, and that alone is a success. And I worry that because of how skinny and small he is, that we're never going to see him become the world's heavyweight champion. You know, Daniel Bryan, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio—you can look at guys. Who in the WWE became world heavyweight champion. You can look at other companies like AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels and Ring of Honor. You know, many other guys that could become Kenny Omega. He used to be the junior heavyweight champion, and then he became the heavyweight champion. So it's completely possible. Some of the biggest names in New Japan, the guys are borderline junior heavyweights. Tanahashi is not that heavy yet, guys. You know, and he's the Hulk Hogan of New Japan. So it's outright possible that Ricky Starks can become like a world heavyweight champion in many cases. But then again, there's a big difference between the Japanese culture and the American culture. The American culture, it's a very big niche and very rare for it to happen. But as I say all that, as I point all that out, I will say that this guy, I do not doubt, becoming the national champion, tag team champion, probably the television champion, this guy... You know, and I just pulled it up. Yeah, Tanahashi's 223 pounds. He's literally 1 kilogram over going for the junior heavyweight championship. And this guy has main evented Wrestle Kingdom more than any other wrestler in the history of New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, so Ricky Starks can outright be possible. He's probably like 170 pounds, though. He's a welterweight. And I just worry about like that, you know, because it's hard to be the future king when you're not going to be the world's the heavyweight champion, you know. But with this right here just helps solidify even more what Dave and I have been saying about the guy and what his future is going to be, and I think it helped put him up another pedestal. I think it helped be that extra caveat in justifying him becoming a champion at some point. Maybe he'll win the TV title tournament. Maybe he's going to win another title or something. But Ricky Starks, tonight was a shine for him because it was like an extra wave of a breakout. He's no longer a breakout star in the NWA, but he was a breakout in taking on the world's heavyweight champion. So it's like a breakout in the major league division of the NWA. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
So I know I just went on a major diatribe, everybody. Sorry. But yeah. So we did our plugs and everything. I hope you guys enjoy all that. Check out all the different shows. You know, Transcontinental Project, they are now back and running. They are off their hiatus. We just recently got the Inhuman Experience to be joining up with the WNC Network. There's, you know, I do the reality psychology podcast every so often. We got so many other shows as well involved. So please check out everything and support the WNC Network. If you guys know anybody that is doing a podcast or you're doing a podcast, email us at WNCShow@yahoo.com. If you guys are interested in starting or building up your show and you want to be able to get on distribution, we're available on over 20 different platforms thanks to this guy, Papa Dave. He's got us on. I mean, we started off and we had like one or two. And Dave took the reins, and he's literally the director of production for the WNC. This guy has got us out there, produced on so many different platforms. We're on the small ones like Podchaser and Paradise and Listen Notes, to the big ones like Google Podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, like Spotify, like Spreaker. I think we're on Spreaker. We're on Stitcher. All these different platforms, and he's pulled that off. And so we want to share that joy with everybody else. So if you guys are wanting to build yourselves up and everything, email us and just title it as "Want to join the network," and then just tell us the details, what your show is. I've made the joke many times that you guys could be wanting to, you do a podcast on stamps, and I say I'll be interested because I know there's a market for it. If DJ Dells and his sneaker podcast could become a major thing, clearly a podcast on the oldest form of collection is completely possible outside of scalps. I know Papa Dave's not, okay, you gotta talk to him if you're, doing a, show on stamps, but, you know, at least we'll give you the opportunity for an interview, right, Dave?
That sounds like a good deal.
There you go. So, with that,
let me give one other real quick little plug. We are thrilled that Transcontinental Project and that Luke and Sensible Sam are back. You'll be seeing their show now that they're back in the saddle again. You'll be seeing that in the regular rotation. So please be looking forward to that. We've still got plenty of Johnny's Reality Check shows. They come out, we put them out every Saturday. Which day? Transcontinental Project, for our purposes, comes out on Friday, come out on Saturday. We're going to work out the come out date for Inhuman Experience. And dude, there's all kinds of things. It's a new year, new possibilities. We're growing. We're excited. If you'd like to be part of it, you can hit, either me or Johnny up on the website. You can hit me up on Twitter at WNC Super Party. Follow me there. Hit me up on the DM if you've got some questions or comments or you'd like to know more. We are glad to tell you. We are glad to share what we're doing with you. And if, we can be a good fit with each other, let's sit down and talk about it.
Exactly. So with that, we're closing out the night. I hope you guys have a good one and talk to you guys later.
Peace.